Knox City Affairs Committee will please come to order. What is this, the 22nd, I guess, of March? Present today, on my left is Representative Peterson, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, and Vice Chair Wes Keller. And I'm Bob Lynn, the Chair of the Committee. Today we have two items on our agenda, HCR 28, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and HB 347, Use of Municipal Funds for Initiative. And we'll start, if it's all right, with HCR 28, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So will the presenter please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning.
Please introduce yourself and please introduce yourself and introduce us to this bill.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Rachel Kalander, staff for Representative Munoz, here to introduce HCR 28.
For whom? I didn't know.
Representative Munoz.
Okay.
here to introduce HCR proclaiming the month of April 2012 to be Sexual Assault Awareness Month in Alaska. I'm pleased to have this opportunity to address you on this issue, ending violence against women today in Alaska. We commend all of the experts, social workers, law enforcement officers, legislators, and volunteers listening in today for their dedication to ending this most pervasive human rights issue. As you're already aware, Alaska has long suffered the highest rates of sexual assault in the country, estimated at 2.5 times the national average. These numbers are clearly unacceptable, and until this epidemic is stopped, it will continue to devastate our families, individuals, and communities here at home. All Alaskans deserve a life free from violence, and this resolution, as well as the Governor's Choose Respect campaign, will hopefully send an important message to Alaskans that sexual violence is not to be tolerated, silenced, or covered up. The resolution provides a set time for reflection and dialogue, which will encourage Alaskans to speak out against this issue, make it known across the state that these acts will not be overlooked in our communities. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, the resolution also recognizes the hard work of the many volunteers, staff, and agencies who dedicate their lives to providing victims of sexual assault with safety, options, and justice. These public servants deserve our respect as well as our support. Proclaiming the month of April 2012 to be Sexual Assault Awareness Month is an honorable recognition of the great need in Alaska to combat this epidemic, by speaking out, listening to those who have been harmed, and removing the veil of silence from this issue. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee would appreciate any and all co-sponsorship for this resolution as it moves through the process. Thank you for your time. If you have any questions at all for me.
Thank you very much. You know, too bad we couldn't make a sexual awareness year.
I know.
Or decade.
we would need it.
Hopefully we need it. I do notice here on the result, we don't have any copies where this is going to go. I'm trying to think whom it might be appropriate to send it to.
Copies of the resolution?
Yes. Normally we have a resolution on this or that. We send copies of it, you know, to people. And I don't know who. Any suggestions in the committee or anything where we might send it?
Certainly. Other than just look into that and come up with a list.
I'm sorry.
A list of where it could be sent.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. We can definitely brainstorm that and get back to the committee.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to hold up the bill for that.
Right.
But, I mean, I think
I would think that
I hate to do a resolution like that and just put it in a filing cabinet somewhere.
Well, I would think that maybe we could work with the governor's office and distribute maybe among the organizations and the different campaigns and individuals, experts around the state.
Well, that'd be good. Because usually in resolutions it says copies to be sent to and have a list of, you know, a dozen people or agencies or something. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for your introduction to this resolution, Rachel. And I was wondering, are they planning a publicity campaign, radio, TV ads, newspaper, anything to make sure that people know that April is
through the chair, Representative, as far as I am aware, in regards to this resolution, this has been kind of a standing thing since 2001, and April has been designated Sexual Awareness Month in many communities, states, and campaigns across the country in April since the 1990s. So I would definitely hope so. I could speak to some members about that as well as my boss and get back to you on that. But I know that hopefully this is in alignment with the Choose Respect campaign, and so its effectiveness and awareness will be through that primarily.
I know, you know, the governor has bill signing thing for various bills that we pass. He doesn't do that for resolutions, of course, but I wonder if this should be used some kind of a presentation by the governor to somebody somehow.
Okay.
Representative, I'd like to recognize that Representative Kyle Johansson is joining us. Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You asked for cross co-sponsoring and on the bill, but can we do that on, when it's a...
It's a committee bill.
We can't co-sign
various committee bills that come out or resolutions. Some I'd like to.
I thought of that right away, and I thought, oh, so then I looked to see...
Like my last resolution.
Who was sponsoring, and I thought, oh, darn, I can't do it because it's a committee.
Well, we can certainly make a statement when it comes to the floor. Any other comments when we want anybody on the committee? If not, I have, you can just stay there if you like. Well, I guess these folks are in the room. Do we have, I'm just going to go down the list. Do we have Rowena Palomar? Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Please identify yourself.
My name is Rowena Palomar. And I am the Executive Director of Advocates for Victims of Violence, a domestic violence shelter, sexual assault from the community of Valdez. I am here to support April as the Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It is important to have April as the Sexual Awareness Month. This month brings awareness to the community and gives the message to individuals that are affected by sexual assault that they are not alone in this battle. There are resources available, there is help available, there are people who are ready to listen 24/7. Because of this campaign we have been doing in our community, we have seen an increase of individuals that sought services and individuals coming forward for assistance. As we all know, sexual assault is, Alaska has the highest rate per capita for sexual assault. This is very important for us, and most importantly for the victims, to have the perpetrators be accountable for their actions. In Valdez, we have prepared several activities for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. On April 2nd, we will be having the proclamation to be read at the City Council meeting. On April 3rd, we will have a walk a mile in her shoes. This campaign is going to be led by men in our community.
In Valdez.
Mm-hmm, in Valdez. That men would be walking in high heels, in flip-flops, to have a feel of how women, when they are being assaulted, this would give respect to all women survivors of sexual assault. We are also partnering with our school district, which is the clothesline. We would be working with 500 students in Valdez from kindergarten to sixth graders, that we would be giving out 500 T-shirts to every individual, to every student, and we will ask them to draw or art through artworks that show us how you want to be protected. We would be having these kids to express their feelings of how they would like to be respected, how to be treated. And after that, we would be collecting all those shirts, put it on the line, and be displayed at the hallway of the school. We would also be having our Women of Distinction. We are going to honor 11 women from the community of Valdez who have contributed through their philanthropic works and as a role model in our community. So, again, I would like to thank Rachel here, and just to be aware that sexual assault is very important. Women needs to come out. They know that there are help available.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you say you're planning for the activities mm-hmm. for April. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, of course, we haven't passed this resolution, and so we haven't established that yet. So I guess my question is it more valuable from your perspective to not have the resolution being that establishing that month for each year so that you can plan ahead, or is it more valuable to have a resolution go through the legislature each year, although that may not actually occur before the month in which your activities are planned?
It would be very, very helpful for us that the resolution be passed. But regardless it passes or not, each community, as I'm aware of, is going to have an awareness campaign for sexual assault.
What are you saying? This resolution is for Sexual Awareness Month, April 2012, mm-hmm. and we have, you know, years following that, and unfortunately, we still have the situation next year, I'm afraid. And so I think he's saying, would it be good to have the month, or should this be an ongoing, every April, am I correct? Which would be, I guess, the most effective. That's, you know, resolution is resolution, but we're trying to do something. It not just have a piece of paper, it's for it to be effective in helping resolve this problem.
We would prefer to have April every year to be the Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
So you like
just for not just for 2012, but every April to be designated as Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
If we pass this resolution as it is, it'll be April 2012. Then next April, we probably need to pass another resolution. Of course you get publicity with a resolution, you know, whatever you pass it on, and that's why you do these resolutions. But with one resolution for, you know, the next, can anybody help me out here? Representative Seaton? You know what I'm saying.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was the question that I was asking, and I think that maybe when the sponsor at the end, when we're asking questions of the sponsor, we can find out what the sponsor would like to do on this. I mean, we have established a number of resolutions that establish a month or a day each year, and this one only establishes 2012. And I think we're going to need to decide as a committee and with the sponsor as to whether it's more beneficial to only have it to be the 1 year, or whether it's and have to come back every year through the process, or whether it would be more beneficial. And I'm not sure the sponsor's desire on that. So
do you have a clue on
through the chair, Representative? I can speak with the sponsor about it. I don't know her position on that. I can't imagine it would be controversial. I'm aware that this first took place in Alaska in 2001, that I was informed of, so it has been passed annually in that manner since then, I believe yearly, but I can check on that and follow up.
Well, I don't want to hold this resolution for that. I guess it could be amended on the floor or something. I think this last committee of referral, Representative Wilson.
You know, I think that this is an important point, because I have a resolution that made February Heart Awareness Month, and I asked the Heart Association if they wanted it to be every year so it would be automatic. And they said, oh, no, we kind of like to do it once a year. Well, right now, that resolution is sitting in the Senate. February is gone. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe sometimes we need to rethink some of these things and realize that it doesn't always flow as easy as we would like it to sometimes. And so maybe instead of trying to do it every year, it'd be a good idea to do it one time, and then that makes it automatic for every year after this, because it doesn't always get accomplished like we hope it does.
May I speak? I would agree with you, Representative Wilson, that to make April as a continuous sexual assault awareness month, that we don't have to do it every single year. Have April as the designated sexual assault awareness month.
Yeah.
But that would require a bill, I think. It would not require a bill. This is a resolution. Resolution is simply an official opinion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg and Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that if you're going to have it on a permanent basis, the normal policy is to make it a piece of legislation, a bill, because then it would go into the statutory books. This is just a proclamation, and usually there for a specific period of time like this particular April. And the ones I've seen that declare certain days, whatever they are usually bills.
Well, we just passed out of committee a National Guard Day. A month, right? Was it a day, a month? It was a day, National Guard Day, and that was actual legislation. It's residing in the Senate the other time. And, of course, as Reverend Wilson said, no one knows today what the legislative schedule or issues are going to be a year from now. No one can predict that. That's why this job is so interesting. And so you don't know, you know, what the flow of legislation is going to be at any particular time. Representative Keller.
Yeah, this is part of the, this is a committee discussion, but I'm doing it while you're here so you can respond if it's okay.
Yes,
with the chair. I would resist making this an ongoing, forever on. And the reason is this particular topic is a little difficult for people to look in the eye. And, none of us like to, are very comfortable when we start talking about sexual abuse of children and domestic violence. And I think there's a value in the process of you being here and reminding us. And I never want to forget, And I think that the process is valuable in this one. And that isn't to say that I wouldn't respect if that was your decision, but I would like to not do it on the fly. That's why I would resist it today. You know, I would like you to come to us and say, we want this in the books forever on. So, thanks.
I think that's well put, because we're having this discussion now. It's being recorded. Unfortunately, Gavel is not here today. And more people watch that than you actually think. But it'll go to the floor, I believe. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of comment on the floor, and that is definitely going to be on Gavel to Gavel. Yes,
I just had one comment, Mr. Chairman. Back to what Representative Wilson said about her conversation with the Heart Association for her legislation. I can't speak for the sponsor. I'd speak for myself on this, that I would be hesitant to move through, as the Vice Chair just said, on this quickly, to make it a prolonged thing. Before speaking with all agencies involved and all nonprofits and individuals who are so dedicated to this issue in Alaska, without hearing from them first, which would be quite a process, but I think significant.
I'm almost 100% sure this resolution is going to pass here and on the floor, but perhaps before you consider this next year, you might have this conversation. But it is valuable, as Vice Chair says, to have the conversations here and then on the House floor and on the Senate process and on their floor to get publicity to it. I want to press ahead. Did you have any other comments? Thank you so much for your testimony. I really do appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
We have Sherilyn Tabachek. Tell me if I murdered your name, if I abused your name.
Not too terribly. Sherilyn Tabachnik.
One more time, Tabachnik?
Tabachnik.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. Please identify yourself and whom you represent.
Great. Thank you. Morning. I'm Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. I'm the executive director of AWARE, Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies here in Juneau. I also serve as the chair of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which represents victim service programs from around the state. This week we are having meetings here in Juneau, and it's my honor to host Juneau as having our sister programs here. Rowena represents Valdez in one of those programs. We're very pleased, of course, with this resolution recognizing April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. The resolution states many reasons why this is important for Alaska, and I appreciate your discussion and clear support and concern about this issue. In 2010, there was a statewide survey conducted by the University of Alaska Anchorage and the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and it revealed that over 37% of adult women in Alaska experienced sexual violence in their lifetime, over 37%. This is a survey that only counted women. It didn't include men. It didn't include children. So we can only imagine the actual number of people, of Alaska citizens, who've been impacted by sexual assault. To bring recognition to this issue, as the proclamation of April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month does, invites individuals and communities to speak about sexual assault, which allows for greater intervention and prevention services. It helps take away the shame and take away the blame. In Juneau, if you're around the first week of April, we have a number of activities planned for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We have a training to engage men in our work. That's on Tuesday evening, April 3rd. On Friday, April 6th, we have a healing art exhibit at V's Bistro on 2nd Street. And on Saturday, April 7th, we have our annual Sexual Assault Awareness Month waterfront race. And of course, next week is the Governor's Choose Respect March. It will be in 120 communities in Alaska. It will meet at noon at the Capitol steps if you're available for that. We, of course, appreciate your support in so many different ways that it manifests. If you are able to attend any of our events, we welcome that as well. We appreciate your support for victims and survivors of sexual assault. Thank you so much.
And, of course, you know, we all know, you know, there are cases where the sexual assault, you know, on males, you were saying, and also on elders. It's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Keller.
Yeah, you made that comment in passing about the value of taking away the shame and the blame, and I just wanted to clarify that, you know, and ask you, maybe you're talking about from the victim, the victim shame and the, you know, and the blame, because there is a valid blame or shame here too, and that's part of the reason why this is painful, you know, a topic. And it's in our society, you know, I sometimes think that most of what we do down here in Juneau is to, because the family, you know, suffers and is deteriorating in so many ways. So, anyway, for what it's worth, when you're talking about taking away the shame and the blame, you were talking about the victims. A normal response of a victim is to feel shame and blame themselves, right?
Through the chair, that's right. The victims often blame themselves,
right.
And often that's the message that they get from others,
right.
As well.
And sometimes, too, a family member who's not a direct victim is a victim nonetheless, because you have one parent or the other say, well, you know, why didn't I see what was coming? Why didn't I do something to stop this? Why didn't I report this? Something I thought was just you know, like an accident, was obviously not an accident. It's a precursor to what eventually happened. And so you got a lot of blame within the family and also within the extended family, your you know, grandparents, cousins, siblings, and so on. A lot of shame, you know, to go around there. and blame. Yeah. Any other comments? Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We have Laurie Martin. Are you online or in the room?
Mr. Chair, this is Laurie. I'm on the teleconference.
Thank you very much. One more time, please give your name and affiliation and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Laurie Morton, and I'm the Executive Director for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you for the opportunity to publicly support HCR 28. I'm sorry not to be there in person this morning. I am Fairbanks facilitating a sexual assault response team training. We have 8 teams from around the state, law enforcement officers, advocates, healthcare providers, and prosecutors, learning about best practices in sexual assault response, how to do their jobs and work together in such a way that the victim gets the best care possible and cases can be successfully worked to hold offenders accountable for their actions. I believe it's important for the leaders of our state to stay with one voice that help is available. Survivors will be believed and offenders will be held accountable. With this resolution, you have a forum through committee work, floor speeches, and your own constituent update to not only highlight this month of awareness, but to stress that every day is a day each of us can respect sexual violence and work to change our community to ones in which women, children, men, all of us really are safe in our homes, with our neighbors, friends, co-workers, relatives, those who now are more likely than strangers to commit acts of sexual violence against us. I appreciate the resolution's acknowledgement of the people who are dedicated to this work and the call to assist them in their efforts. We have heroes around the state, women and men, throughout Alaska, who hear the terrified screams, see the rift closing, touch tear-stained faces, wait in the silence with someone who's struggling to find her or his way through what has happened. And these women and men of courage go home every day and miraculously come back on their next shift to again bear witness, to say it is not your fault. We are here. You are not alone. I want to thank each of you for your constant support and work on these issues over the years, and I would urge you to forward HCR 28 and join us in the effort to bring light to this dark subject. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. You look like you wanted to say something? No, you didn't. Any questions or comments from the committee? I'd like to thank you for your testimony, for calling in this morning. Yes.
Thank you.
No, sorry.
Okay. Is anybody else online who would like to testify? Anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? If not, we'll close public testimony.
Sure. Could I ask the sponsor a question?
Okay, you need to do this before the gavel comes down, but you're my friend for many, many years. Go ahead.
I'm only lucky he's holding his right hand and I'm on his left side.
You are on my left many ways. Go ahead.
Okay, back to the conversation we had about whether this should be just this year or on an annual basis. I'd like to call your attention and the representatives to some statutes. Legal holidays are listed in statute in AS 4412.010, and those are the actual holidays that are observed in the state, days off at state offices. The next set of statutes are called designated days of honor, and early on in my career, Martin Luther King Day was set up first as a day of honor, and then it was moved to become a statute, and that had been AS 4412.045, and there are a whole bunch of those statutes, and they go from AS 4412.030 to AS 4412.118, and some of them are months, actually. There's Avalanche Awareness Month, and of course the ever popular Motorcycle and Motor Scooter Awareness Month, sponsored by the Vice Chair and amended in the Transportation Committee, chaired by Representative Wilson, amended by me to include motor scooters. So if you think that this rises to the level...
This is not appropriate to ask how motor scooters got in there, but...
That was my amendment in transportation.
I have no doubt. Go ahead.
And if sexual abuse rises to the level of motor scooter awareness, you might want to put it in statute.
Through the chair, I fully agree with you. Having been here only 3 weeks, I am completely unaware of the history of this conversation about when a day should be designated as that day and honored on that day or month annually, to be passed annually, or for all time. So I can most certainly speak with Representative Munoz and others to see what the consensus on this is. I also agree with the route that Representative Wilson took with her legislation in speaking with the different agencies. I'm not sure if timeliness is of the essence right now, if that would make the most sense for 2012. However,
a little late for this year.
However, I do agree that that's an important question for next year, I hope.
And we'll meet after the committee meeting here to find out what happened to motorbikes and these little, scooter thing, little metal thing you stand on.
And I should put on the record that my friend at
no,
the
you shouldn't.
That used to be a prime example of the motor scooter fan club, and I'm in there too, but my wife won't let me get one.
We digress. Yes.
If there's no more discussion, I have a motion.
I will entertain a motion. But nothing involved with
motor scooters.
Okay.
I would move that House Concurrent Resolution 28, version 1447 alpha, be moved from committee with the attached State Affairs Zero Fiscal Note and independent recommendations.
Thank you very much. We'll move this out of committee. Thank you and your sponsor and those who presented to us today for coming here. We'll take a short at ease while we do the House State Affairs Committee. Will please come back to order. And next on today's agenda is House Bill 347. It's sponsored by Representative Olson, co-sponsored by Millett, Stoltz, Feige, Thomas, Johansson, Keller, Pruitt, Sadler, Lynn, Fairclough, and Tammy Wilson. That's almost enough to pass it on the floor. It would take many more. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Lynn and the members of the committee. I promised myself never to come back before this committee with a vanity plate bill. I made the mistake of doing that
I think we took care of them all, although I wasn't entertaining the thought of a motor scooter plate.
But before us today, we have House Bill 347. This bill would prohibit a municipality or borough, local government, from using public monies to support or oppose an initiative proposal unless the use of the funds were approved by a vote of the members of the community, the borough, the city, in an election. And so if they had the backing of the people, they would be free to do it. It would, in effect, expand the public process by ensuring that there's checks and balances on the expenditure of the money. I had hoped that the quarterly APOC report from the most recent initiative would have been out, so we could have translated the public funds into CAPSIS items for the various cities and boroughs that were doing it, so we'd have a better handle on what it is. But I believe that there's probably somebody in the room that has a better handle on what the total will be than I do, but I'm guessing it's probably going to come in at about $250,000, possibly more. Roughly, I believe that the actual dollars spent on gathering these signatures will be somewhere between $80,000 and $100,000. I had my office check to see what other states were doing, and as part of the packet, there is a ledge research that covered 20 states. I think they gave up after 20 because they found most of the states had a stricter law in the books than what we're proposing with this one. In retrospect, had I had that at the beginning, this bill would probably be slightly different. But I'm satisfied that it meets some balance. But I'd like to introduce Ann Latham to the committee. I don't believe you've been before this committee yet, and she is prepared to get into the nuts and bolts of it, and will probably do a better job than I would.
Could you give a practical example, or what I'm thinking on this is, I go out and propose an initiative of some sort, and you know, gather the necessary signatures for whatever the initiative addresses, mm-hmm. and depending on what the initiative is, of course, you can almost go broke doing it. It's very, very difficult to get the necessary signatures. And then somebody is trying to pass the initiative or to not pass the initiative, and they may not be well funded, but in comparison to those who are sponsoring the initiative, quite often they don't nearly have the funds available for the campaign that the city might have. It could be not very even-handed. That's not the subject here, but I think school bonds and so on, you know, like that, same type of category as I understand it. So do I have that correct?
This would cover just the initiatives.
But yeah, I know, but I mean, the fact is it's uneven. The folks who have the initiative, they don't typically have, unless it's some initiative sponsored, you know, backed by outside groups, they don't typically have the funds to defend themselves that the city has, or municipality has, to support or oppose the initiative.
And if we took the current initiative as an example, we had a situation where we had an issue with coastal zone management that had been thoroughly vetted by the legislature. I believe that bill sucked about half the oxygen out of the building last year.
Yes, it did.
In various forms, either the special session or the regular session or what. But
on both sides of the issue.
On both sides of the issue. But I can give you an example on the Kenai Peninsula, which is the only area that I'm familiar with. Representative Seaton had a member of his community who was one of the three sponsors, and that gentleman organized Homer and the south part of the peninsula, and to the best of my knowledge, not a penny of public money was spent on the gathering that the people on the south peninsula did, and they did an extremely credible job because they believed in the issue. But conversely, the balance and the vast majority of the signatures, and you can probably confirm that with somebody speaking behind me later on, were gathered by paid signatures. And in effect, we could end up in a situation where we end up with the fourth leg to the stool. You know, we've got the executive branch, the judicial, the legislative branch, and then we've got municipalities that aren't happy with the way legislation has gone. And we can go down that route, I guess, but ultimately a good portion of their money is money that they've got from us. So in effect, they're the funds that they're spending in that effort are funds that they received as municipal revenue sharing or something else. And I know I've been contacted by several people in Juneau who have thanked me for this. I've been contacted by several mayors, apparently the Council of Mayors or Alaska Council of Mayors also put funds into it. The Municipal League did. Several Native corporations, a lot of special interest. Those, all of them are entitled to do it, but my only issue is public money is being expended on it.
I believe we have somebody, a Municipal League, to testify later. I believe Representative Johansson, you had a comment or question?
I was just going to ask the sponsor if it would be helpful if he would mind if I took a minute to just kind of clarify some of the issues, the money that was spent on the initiative signature gathering.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
For the
and it's pertinent to the bill, right?
Absolutely. It's exactly what the sponsor was talking about. just as an example, in listening to his introduction, the Alaska Municipal League contributed $5,000. The Conference of Mayors, which is part of the Municipal League, contributed $10,000. North Slope Borough, $25,000. Bristol Bay Borough, $4,000. The Pribilof Island Community, $10,000. City of Valdez, $5,000. Bristol Bay Borough, $5,000. City. So those are some of the entities that have spent large amounts of money that are municipal entities. And this was just through the signature gathering portion.
And through the chair, if I might expand on that, those are only the numbers that have been reported.
That's correct.
And I guess I might add, the money that they spent, this came from someplace, and where it came from, taxes in those venues, and that comes out of the pocket of people who may or may not agree with the initiative. Is that correct?
Just two more things, if you don't mind, if the sponsor doesn't mind. One, that money comes from some lots of places, and some of it is from our operating budget, I believe. Municipal revenue sharing is based on the price of oil still. Is that how it goes, I think? And then the only other point I wanted to make is you mentioned raising money on the initiative and then having the opposing groups raise money and who has the money. During the signature, this was the first initiative that went through the new rules with the signature gathering, and all of this money, $115,000-some-odd, were raised. 70-some thousand spent, and there was no group put together to oppose signature gathering. So you didn't have a group that was highly funded that stood next to a signature gatherer saying, don't sign this. It was a one-way road on gathering signatures, which is fine. I think that's perfectly acceptable, but just so that the chairman...
Very good.
Thank you.
But the money, it comes from someplace, and ultimately it comes from Mr. and Mrs. Alaska in one form or another.
Okay. And that's why I was trying to relate it to CAPSIS projects, but we won't be able to do that until we get the final APARC report in to see what the grand total is.
Yeah, please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chairman Lynn, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham, and I'm staff representative.
Could you get a little closer, please? Okay. You don't scoot the mic. Okay. There you go.
All right. Before you is House Bill 347, an act prohibiting the use of municipal funds to support or oppose an initiative proposal, to circulate a petition for a ballot initiative, or to influence the outcome of an election concerning a ballot initiative without approval by municipal voters at an election. So as Representative Olson said, this bill requires voters to approve the use of municipal funds at an election. Currently, municipalities can spend thousands of dollars on consultants and paid signature collectors to influence the outcome of a ballot initiative. Although voters may be in support of a ballot initiative, they may not be in favor of municipal funds being allocated to special interest groups to finance that initiative, as Alaska law currently allows. This bill creates awareness about where municipal funds are actually going, and it empowers voters. If the voters' priorities are the same as the municipalities, voters would approve of funds to influence a ballot initiative. And if the voters' priorities differed from the municipal agenda, the process would stop before additional funds were spent. So, in a sense, House Bill 347 could be a cost-saving measure as the state shifts to become more fiscally conservative. I asked Legislative Research for a report on how many states had enacted legislation similar to House Bill 347. 14 of the 20 states they reviewed prohibited the use of public funds to support or oppose an initiative altogether. Those states are Arizona, California, Georgia, Florida, Idaho, Massachusetts, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, North Dakota, Oregon, Utah, Washington, and Wyoming. Those states do allow municipalities to expend funds to provide information or educational materials regarding an initiative, and I've enclosed a copy of the Legislative Research Report for your review. House Bill 347 isn't nearly as restrictive as the current legislation in the states I've just mentioned that don't allow the use of municipal funds for any political advocacy. This bill allows municipalities to use funds with voter approval. The intent of House Bill 347 is to keep the ballot initiative process fair and to ensure that the priorities of the municipality are the same as the priorities of its citizens.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well put. Questions from the committee? Comment? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. When we're looking at municipal funds, how much do special elections cost for, let's say, the boroughs to conduct to authorize the expenditure of the funds, and how do those costs relate to the costs that any municipalities have put into the recent initiative?
Well, through the chair, Representative Seaton, that would really depend on the size of the municipality. I mean, a special election in Anchorage would vary from a special election in North Slope Borough or elsewhere throughout the state.
Mr. Chairman,
I don't have a set.
Do you have a estimate of what it would cost in the Kenai Peninsula Borough or the North Slope Borough or any borough?
I can find that out for you.
Ms. Chairman, I think it's important to find that out because we do have elected municipalities. Whether it's borough assemblies or municipal elections where the people elect people to represent them. And if the effect of this is to dramatically increase the cost of participation, then we need to know that. I mean, I think that a special election in Kenai Peninsula Borough costs about $300,000. And I'm not sure whether those figures are correct or not, but I think that we need to know that because if what we're doing is putting forward something that really precludes the municipalities from effectively putting forward their voice on issues that we have legally allowed through the initiative process to come before us, then I think we just need that information. Thank you.
Okay. And Representative Keller?
Related to that question, this is not the only way a municipality could choose to spend the money, right? And as I look at the existing law, it talks about the authorized by B and C, and I don't know what that is. Could you describe it? I'm talking about page 1, line 7. Maybe the Muni League would be a representative would be better to answer that. But
I can add that it was quite contentious when it was brought up to the Council of Mayors. I believe that the small mayors outnumbered the large mayors, and it's one person, one vote. But I think that the mayors, and I'm sure Kathy Wasserman can correct me if I'm wrong, but the three or four mayors that were adamantly against expending monies on the initiative represented probably 60-65% of the state.
Okay, and after we get done a couple of questions here, we're going to call Ms. Wasserman up next, I think. I know that I've seen you got copious notes over here. I'm interested to see what you got, but let's get a little further along. Representative Wilson.
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll circle my petition on that
one. You do what?
I said before I exercise my right to speak, I'll have to get a petition signed by the voters.
Right to speak. Is there a right to speak on the committee?
I thought there was.
Thank you.
Depends on this. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It makes a difference, too, whether you have to call a special session or a special election for this, or whether there's already going to be one, and so you add something to it. So the cost varies tremendously depending on what time of the year it is and whatnot. So, I think my point would be that I would rather not have any municipality out there paying with the money that we've given them for other purposes, you know, and so. That's just my feelings.
Thank you. Representative Wasserman. Let me try it again. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. You just gave Kathy a heart attack back there. I know we need to move on with the bill, but I just wanted to make the point.
as two comments were made on the left-hand side of the table, that one, it's going to be very expensive to do this, and I wonder if the sponsor would comment on my comment. This is not about voicing an opinion. This is about writing a check. Any municipality can voice an opinion through resolution, through letters from the mayor, and Representative Gruenberg mentioned that you know, the right to have a voice. Writing a check is not a right to have a voice. Every entity can easily express their opinion. And is this not writing a check? Because of the hundred and some thousand dollars that was raised from municipalities, 50,000 of it was sent to one person in Anchorage to gather signatures in Anchorage. So this is not about the North Slope Borough writing a $30,000 check to get signatures in the North Slope Borough. It has nothing to do with it. So I wonder if the sponsor has any comments on that.
No, I think you hit it right on the head.
Thank you.
And I might add, up until this morning, I've had no negative feedback on this bill. The only feedback has been through a few of the mayors and city managers that have passed through on other issues when they were in town and thanked us for doing it. But up until about 5 minutes before the committee started, nobody's indicated they had an issue with it.
Very good. Representative Gruenberg is excused. He didn't leave because he didn't have a right to speak or permission to speak, but he had the bill up. He's coming back.
I'm okay. I've been given a reprieve.
Reprieve.
Okay. Now you...
Thank you.
With my permission, you may speak.
Thank you. It's, by the way, it's our bill on death certificates for veterans.
Okay.
Okay. Several things. And I'm sorry I did not catch your name, ma'am.
Anna.
Hannah? Okay, Hannah.
And with an A.
Okay, good. Couple of things.
A little louder, please. Push the mic.
A couple of things. And I appreciate the bill. It really got me thinking last night when I read it. I just didn't have a chance to look at it before. But I do have some thoughts. First, I really appreciate the research paper that you got. I'm wondering, did you ask them whether any courts have construed the constitutionality, particularly with regard to the free speech aspects and the possible infringement on the municipality's right of free speech of any of these states? Do you have any legal opinions or anything like that?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I don't have that particular question, but initially, I did receive a court opinion that found that initiative petition circulation is core political speech. So that cannot be prohibited. What we could prohibit, as other states have already done, is to prohibit municipalities from receiving.
I see. I would, this bill
I
goes.
Mean, prohibit.
Go ahead.
Just one moment.
This bill does go to judiciary next.
Goes to judiciary next.
No, but what, okay, yeah, we know what it does prohibit. I could proceed with that line of questioning if the members on this committee are interested. Otherwise, I'll reserve that for judiciary. But if anybody wants to, I'm happy to proceed here. Passing to, and I would like a copy of that case and any other legal research you have on the subject, please.
When you get a matter of free speech and, you know, and so on, that's more of a judiciary thing. We have more expertise on there. We have two attorneys on judiciary committee and five wannabes.
I'm pleased to hear that, that they want to be. My second question is, it seems to me in a practical sense, the initiative is often one check or one method of expressing an opposition to a government policy or program. It is usually by people who cannot gain their redress through the normal form of representative government. And it would seem to me that the application of a bill like this, a law like this, would be to allow the initiative sponsors to present their side of the case, yet to prohibit the municipality from presenting its side of the case. Would you care to comment on that? We can, yes. And third, it would seem to me that if you're going to have an election to determine whether you can spend state money, municipal money, that all that will do will be to change the timing of the debate, because there's nothing to prevent the municipality from spending its money in the election to determine whether it can spend money in the election to determine the initiative. You'll simply move the date of the debate up to the initial time when they're going to be debating concerning the first election. All it does is it changes the timing of the debate, not the content. Any comment?
I don't have a comment for you.
One obvious one would be that at least they would know that a majority of the people supported the position, the direction they were going.
Yes.
Through the chair.
Through the chair. That's exactly right. So the debate would take place, but it would take place at an election, not on the initiative itself, but at the time of the election on whether to spend money on the initiative. Just the timing.
Okay. Let's go to Representative Johansson.
Just two things.
On
the debate, whether or not to put the question on the ballot, I would argue that there are many motivations for the debate. It may not just be about the issue. It may be about fiscal conservatism. So the debate on the debate would not be limited just to the issue. So I think that point is a little bit watered down. And then just as a note to the sponsor on Representative Gruenberg's first question, the first footnote on the Ledge Research states, footnote number 3, in Idaho, Massachusetts, and New Mexico, the prohibition is not codified, but rather is pursuant to court rulings. So it's not even codified. It is only through the rulings of the court that this position is supported. So for your next committee, I think that might be something that would be helpful for the sponsor.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gruenberg.
Through the chair, absolutely. This is an issue that is very interesting because it not only deals with policy, but it deals with legal issues. And I was looking here in the state constitution, two lines of issues. One issue is the free speech issue, whether a municipality has in and of itself a right of free speech. And secondly, a different constitutional question, which is what right does a municipality itself have under the articles in our state constitution dealing with the powers of municipal government. It doesn't look to me at first blush like there is a constitutional problem with the second issue. I don't know, but I didn't see anything so far on the free speech issue.
That was my overriding concern, and that was expressed that way to the drafter.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Legislative Research Services paper, the bottom of the first page and the top paragraph of the second, where it says that the initiative, this was the Alaska Corruption Act ballot number 1 in 2010, would have banned the use of public funds for campaign purposes lobbying by state and local government agencies and school districts to support or oppose ballot measures. And that failed by nearly 61% of voters. How different is this than the arguments that were made in the case that for the restriction on municipalities spending those funds that was rejected by the voters by 61% margin?
Through the chair, we have a copy of that, and we could give it to Nancy for copies for the committee. It's one page, and I think when you read it, you'll see what that ours is much less restrictive and doesn't encompass school districts, and there are a number of issues that were added onto that one that are not a part of this one. This one is the slim version.
Okay, Representative Is that a follow-up?
Yeah.
A follow-up, then Representative Peterson.
And following up on that, I guess what I am trying to do is figure out if the issue was the same, and if the issue was the same, why would we expect, if the restriction failed by 61% margin before, that we would get a different opinion by the voters now?
Through the chair, I believe when you have a copy of what was on the ballot in front of you, it'll be self-explanatory.
And that's being reproduced, I believe?
Oh, yes, it's being copied right now. Yes.
Right. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in light of a Supreme Court ruling that came down a couple of years ago that we're all familiar with, the Citizens United case, they said that you can't limit corporations and unions' political speech. So I'm wondering whether we would end up with a court case here because we'd be trying to limit municipal government's freedom of speech. And I'm really hesitant to do that. Well, you know, because freedom of speech is a basic right, but we could end up with ourselves in a court situation over a long period of time and expending a lot of state dollars to find out what the final ruling would be or wouldn't be.
So we need to get some input from the Department of Law on that. I'd like to call it. I'd like to call Ms. Wasserman, Debbie. Kathy Wasserman, up, please.
Thank you.
You might be able. Don't go away. Just stick around.
I mean, Rose.
Okay. And after. Okay. Please introduce yourself. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. Not Legislator Wasserman, but anyway. I'm sure you're very surprised to see me here with regards to this bill.
I'm very pleased to see you
here. Well, thank you. The Alaska Municipal League is, of course, opposed to House Bill 347. I listened to this last discussion, and many things came to my mind. First of all, I noticed in the sponsor's statement, one of the lines was that copious amounts of money are being spent to advance municipalities' own agendas. I'm not sure what the definition of copious amounts of money, but
that means a lot.
Yeah, and there are different amounts. First of all, any amount of money spent on an initiative must go through a hearing process in each municipality. That hearing process must be legally posted and advertised, and there are two hearings. And all input, public input, is allowed. So for someone to say that no one knew or was not able to get into the financial picture of the municipality is not true. People sometimes choose not to and don't pay attention, but the ability is there. All of that money, and that's required by APOC, must go to two hearings.
And we do have APOC available for questions.
Okay. So that's the first thing. It's not that it's being done behind anyone's back. But I'm a little concerned with this, that the amounts of money are spent to advance their own agendas. I guess that sort of infers to me that whoever is leading the municipality obviously has a different agenda than those people that live there. First of all, as elected officials, I know you all know that you'll never have 100% of your voters in line with you.
I've noticed.
Politics. it just doesn't happen. And there will be people who will not be happy with the way money is spent. But those elected officials, just like you, were elected with fiduciary responsibilities, and some of them do have agendas. But, you know, agenda is not always a bad word. And the Alaska Municipal League and the Conference of Mayors both, excuse me, I've got the stuff, both took votes to expend money on this initiative. I think the world of Representative Olson, but I would have to disagree. The mayors that voted against putting money did not represent 65% of the state. They basically were from the same area. They represent a large population, but not 65%. But again, this was a vote. And there were many mayors from large communities there who voted for the expenditure of the money, but some voted against. And again, like politics, they lost. The other thing I would like to point out is the initiative that was done in 2010 that Representative Seaton referred to was one that the municipalities through the Alaska Municipal League actually ran the campaign against. We did that with many organizations across the state, and we were able to defeat that initiative, but it also protected the state legislators from spending any money on anything that they voted on. And I got many calls from state legislators thanking us for taking that stand against that initiative. And now we have an initiative that is against some of the legislators, and suddenly it shouldn't be done. And I just have a very difficult time understanding why it's dependent on which viewpoint we take.
That's what makes politics so darn interesting.
Well, they are. They're gosh darn fun.
Yeah. I do notice here on the bill, one of the co-sponsors is Anna Faircloth, who, of course, is a prominent member of the Anchorage Assembly at one point. So she has, I assume, intimate knowledge of municipal politics, and at least in Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman, are you asking me that? Or?
No, I'm just making a comment. Oh. I thought you were going to respond. Any questions? Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for you as well as for Hannah and the Representative Olson. Another question that comes to mind, and by the way, you've been in the room and you've heard the questions I asked them. I'd be interested in your own organization's legal and political research. I'd appreciate answers to those questions from you as well. And I'm not so interested in getting them off the cuff at the hearing as in writing for both of you, too.
Right.
Those are very, hopefully, thoughtful questions and deserve, hopefully, thoughtful answers. But I have another question as well. And this is a question that is left unanswered from the Ledge research paper. And a careful reading of the document shows only the answer to the question of how many states prohibit the use of public funds to support or oppose an initiative. Those laws could take different forms. Hypothetical one, paradigm one, is public funds may not be used to oppose or support a ballot measure or an initiative. The other hypothetical is like this. No prohibition on the use of public funds to support a ballot measure, a bond measure, something proposed by the city. The only prohibition is to use public funds to speak out on an initiative proposed by the voters. And those are often quite different, because in the one case, the municipality is advancing its own agenda. In the other case, it may very well be prohibited from opposing something supported by some voters somewhere. And that draws the distinction between a very fundamental question of whether it is constitutional and good policy only to oppose public funds vis-a-vis an initiative and not vis-a-vis other types of ballot measures, where the only question is who proposes the ballot measure, which does not seem to me particularly closely connected with the public policy one way or the other. Why should it make a difference whether something's proposed by the voters as opposed by the municipality? In both cases, the voters are asked to approve it. Any comment?
Representative Greenberg, through the chair, We were very careful to form our own group. No municipality has sponsored this particular, they have donated money, true, but no particular municipality has sponsored this current initiative. It was sponsored by a group formed separately. Secondly, I think with the way some of the national laws have changed, under this particular bill, now municipalities will be the only ones that can't say anything. And what bothers me, it doesn't really say in here that don't hand a check over. Expenditure of money, and we learned this in the last initiative that we fought against a group that carried the gag law to the voters, was that expenditure of money means while you're on the clock, you can't say anything. You can't, I mean, it prevents you from doing anything unless you are at home, on your own phone, and excuse me, and then as a representative mayor, that's kind of a question as well, because they're not paid. So are they on the clock 24 hours a day? And those were some of the legal issues that we faced last time. So this, again, means really it pulls municipalities totally out. And there may be some times where there are many times where maybe these initiatives might involve us, good or bad. And I think municipalities need to be able, in a timely manner, to be able to represent themselves.
Any legal research you have on that would be greatly appreciated.
I will find some. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Any questions? We're going to go to Reverend Seaton and then Reverend Johansson.
Thank you. I was interested, you know, in the title. The second line is, or to influence the outcome of an election concerning a ballot initiative. So I guess following up on that, if a municipal official was in Juneau and there were hearings or those kind of things, is your interpretation from the previous bill initiative that they would be prohibited from taking part in those hearings?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes. We were told that they would be prohibited from taking part in anything. They couldn't fly down here and talk about something. They couldn't fly down here and give testimony. It's a lot more far-reaching than just handing a check over.
And follow up?
And, Chairman, I know that we're kind of concentrating on one initiative that we've got.
Right, and this covers a broad range of future, more direct toward the future than the past.
That's correct, and I think that there's times in which initiatives might be brought up that would be directly affecting municipalities, and if municipalities were prohibited from sending people to Juneau to talk to us about those subjects because they're a subject of an initiative, I think that we would have an interesting situation if the initiative involved specifically restrictions or not even necessarily restrictions, would involve something dealing with the municipality, and then the municipalities would be prevented from coming and testifying to us. Coming, lobbying, whatever you want.
Would some kind of a provision in legislation that said this does not prohibit municipal employees from testifying before the state or communicating with elected representatives, while on the job or on the clock?
Mr. Chairman, that would help, and it would also help if they could even have hearings in their own municipality. I mean, my understanding is that they would have trouble even talking about the subject at a city council meeting or a borough assembly meeting because it would be expenditure of funds because it is not directly writing the check, but it's a meeting that's costing the municipality money. And they would have to, if that's a legal interpretation of expenditure of funds, which is what we're hearing, was the legal interpretation of expenditure funds from the ballot measure number one in 2010, then we need something that at least allows the people that are elected on a local level to exercise their what people elected them to do, and that is to work cooperatively as a group to advance the local decisions and priorities. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I have a few questions for Ms. Wasserman, but I do want to make a quick point that, and it's brought up that this is a prohibition. This is not a prohibition. There is a way to, in the bill, it's not a flat-out prohibition from taking part in the process. There's a process to go through. And the second part is I don't believe that that a municipality, if I were on my Ketchikan Gateway Borough, what I would do is simply set up some sort of structure that run through the ballot one time and create a pot of money that you can put $20,000 in, and that's what you use, and the description of the appropriation says to deal with initiatives. It keeps the big money out of the deal, but it allows for staff to go and testify. So I don't think that is really an issue. But I have some questions, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind.
Okay, please.
The AML, is the Conference of Mayors officially a structural part of AML?
Representative Johansson to this chair, yes it is.
Okay. So for all intents and purposes, one entity would encompass the contributions from the AML and the Conference of Mayors, is that?
No, sir. They have separate bank accounts.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, who decides how the money is spent out of each bank account? Different boards? Or
Representative Johansson to the chair, the boards, the executive boards of each of those organizations.
Okay.
Through votes as a rule.
Okay. And where does the AML's funding, the money that you would have to contribute to any initiative, not just the one that we're talking about because it's fresh and literally the only initiative that is under the new initiative laws, but where does the money come from? Who writes you a check that fills the bank account that allows AML and Conference of Mayors to write a check to any initiative?
Representative Johansson, our money comes through a couple of ways. Of course, number one, and I know why this bill is here, is through membership dues from the municipalities. Number two, we have business sponsors and associates that join AML throughout the state. We have probably 40 or 50 businesses that are members of AML that do business with municipalities. We also have other organizations, other nonprofit organizations that are involved with municipalities. We have some tribes that belong. We have the clerks associations and municipal managers associations and.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, if I.
And we also have fees. I'm sorry. I do training, and some of my other staff does training, grant writing training, how to run a good meeting, mm-hmm. parliamentary procedure, so forth. And we get small fees for that.
Okay. May I continue? Are the 40 or 50 business entities and the other entities that you receive money from, is that information that's available to the public? Are we allowed to understand who contributes to your operating budget?
Representative Johansson through the chair, yes, all of that is on our website.
Okay.
Certainly none of it is secret.
Yeah, I've just never looked, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm not interested in the AML, but.
Yeah, but.
Okay, but I think it will give us a good picture of how the money comes into the organization, which I think is important. Mr. Chairman, I just have a couple more questions, if you don't
mind. Yeah, and I have a question, too, after that.
You mentioned that APOC requires two public meetings for money to be expended. Is that within the AML structure, or is that every municipality in the state?
That's every Representative Johansson, through the chair, that's every municipality in the state.
Okay. And then, because I know that some municipalities have consent calendars, which basically is they list everything on the calendar, and if you want to talk about it, you need to make a motion to pull it out and talk about it. So I've seen and I understand and I know that $10,000 appropriation sometimes does not receive the scrutiny that it may have been suggested that it does in some municipalities. I've seen appropriations go through my borough assembly on a consent calendar. There was no discussion. Nobody ever asked, either in the first reading or the second reading. There was no discussion, no talk whatsoever. It was just done, simply because there was nobody there except the municipal officers, the staff, and the legislators, the local people. So it is possible that scrutiny was not, and I know in a perfect world, and what I'm sure AML would prefer is to have a very open discussion about it. But frankly, in the real world, it happens. So. I didn't want anybody to think that everything is completely discussed as thoroughly as it is here at the State Affairs Committee.
One of the neat things about this job is what we all learn, and I was unaware. In my innocence, I thought that AML, all the funds and members of AML were the various municipalities throughout the state. I didn't know there were private entities involved in that too. And I assume that communities pay dues or something to sustain AML, and other and these other groups pay some kind of dues also. Where does the majority of your funds come from? From the actual municipalities, or the tribal groups, the non-municipalities, the private businesses who for whatever reason, join the group? Who's in control here?
Representative Lynn, I would say 60%. Maybe even a little bit more are municipalities. I mean, that's who we serve. But the other, the private members that belong, we do advertising for them. We, excuse me, we give them booth space at our conferences. We allow them sometimes to give classes on their products. So we just, it's a membership fee they pay to be able to have access to the municipal leaders in order to help sell their product, or because they work with them.
Or their issues as well as their product, I assume.
Yeah.
Chairman, yes. Question popped in my head. I think this is important because, and I'd like your feedback, when, you know, there's a prohibition in state law for people to use money that we appropriate to turn around and use it to lobby the legislature. Every time you bring that up to an organization, the answer is, well, we don't use that money. We use this money. So in this case, it wouldn't be, the AML could say, we don't use the municipal revenue sharing money that every community gets. We don't use that. We use the money that we get from the 40 or 50 people or the other money. And so it's interesting to try and figure out, you know, exactly how much money this 40% pays out and what they get for that money, and if, you know, at some point does that run out and then you're only left with municipal money? I mean, it's such a commingling of funds.
Yeah, are these funds, I assume these funds are commingled.
Representative Lynn, through the chair, or Representative Lynn, yes, they are.
I know that some of the issue groups out there, they have a group that promotes their issue, and then they have a separate group that does political especially their political voice, and they don't commingle these funds, am I correct? But you don't do that. This is all one lump sum of cash, and you do with it what you will. Is that correct?
Representative Lynn, the board does with it
well,
what
I don't
they
mean
want.
Personally.
What they want, yes. What they take a vote on or what they decide.
Right, right. So,
yes, sir.
Right. I saw a hand down here. Follow up, and then Representative Seaton. Then I want to go to another testifier.
In the charge of the Alaska Municipal League, in your duties of every day, in part of what you do is help smaller communities who just basically can't, they don't have the manpower to do certain things. Mm-hmm. In that capacity, does the AML provide accounting services? Do you have somebody or some way that you help them with their balance sheets or their operating budgets, et cetera? Is that part of your charge at AML?
Representative Johansson, through the chair, no, we don't. I've only got four employees. but I try, what I try to do to them is give them a name of somebody who can help them, or have people at my disposal who can offer them help when they need it. And sometimes that's the state, because we have a little bit of a closer, well, not a closer, I would say, you know, I talk to these, try to talk to all these people on a weekly, monthly basis, and so I kind of pretty well know what's going on in their community, and I try to help them find what they need to run more efficiently or effectively. But I don't do it for them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to, Representative Seaton, next up. Then after you, I'm going to cut off at that, we're going to, I have some other, just for information, I'll be wanting to talk to Mac or Haggerty after we get done with, Mr. Haggerty, if you are hearing us, please be prepared. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I was just, the line of questioning we were going on, I was trying to figure out whether we were trying to prevent the Alaska Municipal League from participation in any of these, or we're actually talking about, since the municipalities might belong to an organization, and that organization might do something, whether I'm trying to figure out if we're trying to prevent municipal funds from being expenditured to oppose it or support an initiative. And then we've got the Alaska Municipal League, and it seems like we're saying, well, since you're a member of an organization, then that any organization that you're a member of is prohibited from using any funds from that organization to support or oppose an initiative. And it seemed like that's where the conversation came to. And I think that we need to qualify that with the sponsor and find out if that's the sponsor's objective, to say that any organization that a municipality is a member of is also prohibited then from supporting or opposing an initiative, because some municipal funds went to a organization as a member of that, you know, as an association. So I wanted to put that on the table so that we
can. And I'm here from some other folks that you'd be cogitating on that. Let me get the coming other folks online, then we'll bring it up and we'll take some kind of action here. You can stay there if you like. Mac O'Haggerty, are you with us? You and Homer?
Yes, I am, and thanks for allowing me to speak, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, please identify yourself and your affiliation. Then you.
Okay, my name is Mac O'Haggerty, and I'm actually just representing myself.
That's the best to represent.
In the spirit of disclosure, I do sit on the Borough Assembly, the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, and I am one of the co-sponsors of this initiative that I think probably started this whole issue, and that's the Coastal Management Program Initiative. And anyway, I just got a hold of the bill last night and took a look at it, and my first reaction is that this is just simply a gag order. Because there's people that don't particularly like the initiative down there, and so that they're just trying to silence those who are in an effort of representing themselves. But looking into it, you know, I start thinking about, well, what is it we do at a municipal level? And one of the things we do is allocate money. And I just looked at just the agenda from last borough assembly meeting, and the top five ordinances that were introduced, one's for $29,000, one's for $200,000, one's for $4.7 million, another one for $569,000. I mean, this is those are large chunks of money that the public trusts us to make the decisions about. And when I hear about the amount of money that was spent on this initiative that the borough, that the municipalities felt was an important initiative, we're talking 5,000 to 28,000. This is minor, and it's really minor. It's really a minor amount of money compared to the amount of money it would take to run an election to see if we could even speak to the issue. And so, anyway, I oppose this. I don't know if I've made that clear, but yeah. I oppose House Bill 347. And to me, it's nothing less than an unfunded mandate. You're basically, if this passes, then the municipalities will be forced to spend a lot of money that they hadn't planned on spending in the first place. And, you know, it's not just about supporting an ordinance like the Coastal Management Program, but it's also, we've had several local initiatives that I feel, you know, my own opinion has had an adverse impact on the way our borough does business. And under this bill, we wouldn't even be able to explain to the public why these ballot initiatives would harm the municipality. So I just no matter which direction you come at this bill, it just doesn't it just seems kind of knee-jerk and short-sighted. Thank you.
Representative Greenberg, and then I'm going to go to I know they're down only for questions. We have Scott Ruby, Department of Commerce, and we have Paul Duvernay at APOC. Global question. I'm going to see if they want to say anything, but first we'll go to was that Representative Greenberg? Yeah, Representative Greenberg.
Mr. Haggerty, you said a minute ago that under this bill you couldn't explain a ballot measure, an initiative, to the voters. I think you need to be careful before you go to that conclusion, because that's not the way I read the bill at all. It says the money may not be used to influence the outcome of an election, to support or oppose the initiative, to circulate a petition, to influence the outcome of the election. It doesn't prohibit a municipality from educating the voters about the effects of an initiative. Do you agree with me?
I don't, and that's because of the how education is or information is interpreted. Because if there was an initiative, whether you're pro or opposed to it, by explaining it, somebody is going to decide that you are either for or against it. Simply through the explanation of what that initiative is.
I think it would depend upon how the message is crafted.
Of course, that's like, you know, education. It depends on who's doing the educating. I'm going to go to Reverend Keller, then we're going to go to Reverend Peterson, and then Johansson, and then we're going to move to the next testifier because we're getting late in the hour. Reverend Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marco, first of all, if I could, I'd like to tell the Chair that I would like consideration of a motion that I hope to make today to move this bill forward. Marco, I think I ride your boats often. Are you the water taxi operator down there?
Roger that. I guess that is part of my spirit of disclosure. I also run a water taxi down here.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to give you a little plug. You run a great great program there, and I really appreciate your service to the community. I just wanted to clarify again something that I think we've gotten into weeds on a little bit. There was comments earlier about restrictions where expenditure might be holding a hearing, might restrict holding a hearing. And I was just thinking as we were talking that, hey, Marco, you kind of serve in a local level, kind of a parallel thing that we do here. And when we have hearings, the intent is to listen and it's based on giving everybody the opportunity to speak. And, you know, sure, that is very, very educational. But the intent, the bottom line core purpose is to get the intent of the community not to steer the community. Whether you're an assembly member or a legislator, that's true. You listen, and you in the education process happens. I don't mean to be lecturing. It's a clarification in our discussion here. I can't see where a restriction on expending money back or support an initiative process could possibly be construed to a restriction of of people's freedom of speech. Where our role is, your role and our role here is to listen to our constituents. So, again, forgive me that, but I think it's a perspective we need in our whole discussion. I'm not necessarily picking on you, but thank you.
Our job is. Should be about 90% listening and maybe only 10% acting on whatever the topic. I'm going to go to Representative Peterson and then Johansson, and then I want to cut off the questions here because I want to get an opportunity for a couple other people in line here before we close and do something. I believe it's Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Haggerty, I was wondering when you're elected by the voters down there in the peninsula, don't you believe that they are giving you the power to vote on how to spend their tax dollars? And if you, as a group, vote to spend those tax dollars to support or oppose an initiative, and the voters think that you were incorrect in the initiative you were supporting or opposing, wouldn't they have the right to vote you out of office the next time your name was on the ballot?
Well, that's the idea, and that's an idea I fully support. That's what elections are all about. And yeah, when I was elected, it was because they felt that, one, I would listen to them, and two, that I would make some good choices. But there's not an ordinance or that comes before our assembly where we don't have somebody speaking for or against it. And so we're constantly getting feedback from the community on how to spend the money. And it's not just overall, it's very specific on each one of these ordinances. So we listen and we respond to what we hear from our community on this stuff. That's another reason why I just don't think this bill is necessary. It's because if a municipality is going to spend money to support or oppose an initiative, they're going to still have to put that out to the community. It's going to be in the agenda. And believe me, we get a lot of people coming down to give us their feedback on how we spend our money.
Good thing. I'm going to go Representative Johansson, and we're going to cut off, and I'm going to give an opportunity for Mr. Ruby and Mr. Dufresne to make any comment if they wish to do so.
Thank you. I just have a couple comments. I just want to make it clear to Mr. Haggerty that assigning the motive of introducing the bill because of a specific initiative is not proper. I don't appreciate that. And number two, language such as this that was compared to the initiative, the anti-corruption initiative, that language was introduced in 2007. So this issue has been going on. This, in my opinion, is not a reaction to a specific initiative. And on his point about them being responsive to their local constituency, we need to be responsive to our constituency, which is the state. And this is about state money. So just wanted to make those two points to the
Well put. Mr. Scott Ruby, apparently you're in Anchorage. Are you available? Do you have any? I have you down for questions only. Did you have any comments you wanted to make? Are you online, sir?
No. The comment I would make is Department of Community or Division of Community and Regional Affairs provides advice and assistance to municipalities on these types of issues. And under B and C of these sections, which is referred to of the existing statute, it talks about how a municipality may use money to explain initiatives, and it expressly authorizes municipalities to do that. And so I think how all that fits together will be an interesting discussion as we go forward.
That's what we have here.
But yeah, but the as far as our fiscal note for the department is, we had a zero fiscal note because we already have staff that work with communities to provide assistance, and we do work with Alaska Municipal League quite a bit in providing training and assistance to the municipalities.
Okay, and for the record, I neglected to, could you please identify yourself once again and who you're speaking for, your affiliation?
My name is Scott Ruby. I'm the director for the Division of Community and Regional Affairs within the Department of Commerce.
Thank you very much for your comment. Mr. Duvernay-Apoc, are you with us, sir?
I am, Mr. Chair. Good morning, sir.
Good morning,
members of the committee. My name is Paul Duvernay. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I just wanted to add that you've been listening to the conversation. If there's none, I appreciate your comments. Representative, I'm having a Rick Perry moment here. Yeah. Would the Chair of Labor and Commerce please come forward? could you do basically a wrap up? Then,
for the record, yeah. District 33, soon to be 29. Possibly. First comment is Mako Haggerty was the gentleman I was referring to at the beginning of the discussion from Homer, who went out and gathered all the signatures by hand and with a crew of people and at no expenditure of municipal money. He is the rock star out of the group that involved in this effort, and I left his name off because I didn't want to taint it by having me recommend him.
Did you hear the comment, Marco? Okay, go ahead.
Questions?
Any questions for the sponsor? If not,
one final statement. I think this can be cleaned up with intent language. I failed when I mentioned that I don't do vanity plates anymore. I've never done intent language, but I know that there are a number of people in the building that are qualified to do clean, concise intent language. I think that a couple of the small issues that were raised could be addressed with intent language.
Thank you very much. Representative Seaton, and then we're going to close testimony.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I'd ask a question about the influence the outcome of an election concerning a ballot initiative. Wondering, I mean, as I read it, it says what it says, and you disagree that the legal interpretation under the 2010 ballot measure one was that meetings and discussion by municipal officials or they're flying to Juneau to talk to legislators is an expenditure of funds and therefore would be prohibited under this bill.
That was not my intent, but that is the intent of having some intent language that would specifically address that to put people at ease. No, they're going to come down here and they're going to be able to testify anything they want. That's why we're in a democracy. But the only intent of this bill is to prevent state monies to be used for signature gathering.
You're fine.
Mr. Chair?
Minister.
If, you know, with due respect to that question, and considering the fact this is going to judiciary and Representative Grunberg will be able to address his questions about freedom of speech, I would like to make a motion that we move the bill today into the next committee. But it is not to shut down the questions that have been raised about what an expenditure actually means. I believe that will be addressed, at least, for sure in the next committee, and I believe that...
And I'm on that same committee.
Yeah, so that's why...
Mr.
Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to object because okay. I think we all represent communities. I don't think we've had an opportunity. We have constituents. And those constituents, in many cases, are our communities, our municipalities. And I've checked with one of my municipalities, which is opposed to this bill, but I've got several others that I have not had a chance to check with and find out what their feelings. Seward, Soldovia, I haven't been able to check with them yet on their feeling on this. So I can't when I've got one community saying that they are opposed to this bill and two that I haven't been able to check with, I don't think that I can vote to move this out of committee when we haven't had an opportunity in a single hearing on the bill to represent our constituents fully. And I don't think that we're just here to represent our own opinions or what we think, but we also need, I need to check with my constituents on this. And the constituents that are affected here are municipalities, because this is directly affecting not individual citizens, but municipalities as organized groups. And so if I don't check with those organized groups that this bill is specifically, I don't mean targeting, specifically denoting, then I don't feel that I would be able to fulfill my obligations here. So I'm,
these groups did have, the bill was noticed, of course.
The with respect to the objection is coming, and a commitment again to answer these questions, I'd make a motion that we move HB 347, 139, or 6 alpha with the attached fiscal note and zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Did you have a comment, Representative Duranton?
I don't know if there was objection to
the motion. I didn't
hear. Yeah, I don't know. Is there objection to the motion?
I object.
Okay. Call the roll.
I have a comment.
Oh, yeah. I beg your pardon.
Thank you. Just three things very quickly. One, to the chairman's comment that this bill was noticed 6 days and 18 hours ago. And I think that's ample time for a member with three full-time staffers and a volunteer to canvass the district to get an opinion. Number two, this is not ballot measure one. There's been discussion about what ballot measure one said and how that relates to this bill. The language in the bill speaks for itself. This is not ballot measure one. It has nothing to do with it. Ballot measure one has all kinds of things thrown in there. And finally, just to put on the record a little bit of irony, the sponsor of ballot measure one is the person that was hired in Anchorage and paid $50,000 to put the Sea Party initiative on the ballot. Think about that for a minute. It may take a couple minutes to sink in, but to me, that's pretty darn funny. I support moving the bill when the time comes.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I oppose moving the bill. We haven't heard from the Department of Law. I believe there are constitutional questions about this bill, and I'm just a little afraid we're going to open ourselves up to test cases in legal proceedings that could end up entangling the state for a long period of time in courts and appeal courts, and we end up spending significant amounts of funds to find out whether this is constitutional or not. So I'm going to be opposing this. Yeah.
And in judiciary committee, of which I'm a member, I will make sure that somebody from the Department of Law is there, perhaps to speak to that issue. Call the roll, please.
Representative Gruenberg, not present. Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative P. Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Heller?
Yes.
Chair Lynn?
Yes.
4 yea, 2 nay.
With that, the bill moves out of committee. I'd like to thank everybody involved, and we'll make sure that we have a very good hearing in the Judiciary Committee on some of the issues that were raised here, and make sure that some folks, for whatever reason, didn't have an opportunity to testify this time, can have an opportunity in the Judiciary Committee. The agenda for our next meeting on Tuesday is not complete yet, so I can't announce that. With that, I'd like to thank everybody on both bills who participated and all the committee, and we are adjourned.